Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
This episode is brought to you by Philo. Do you love TV? Do you love saving money? Then Philo is your solution. Philo has shows, movies, and live TV for just $25 a month. You can even try it for free with their 7-day free trial. No contracts, no commitments, no hassles. Just a better way to watch TV. Never miss a minute of shows like the hit docuseries Where is Wendy Williams? Or classics such as Friends. If you can't get enough TV, then there's no better way to watch. Philo has more than 70 channels like BET, MTV, and AMC. And the best part? You can try it yourself with their 7-day free trial. Sign up today at philo.tv/poppods. That's philo.tv/poppods to get 50% off your first month.
Yeah, this is Rob Dukes from Exodus, and you're listening to Talking Fucking Metal.
Rock over London,
Zurich,
Auckland,
Dublin,
Dallas,
Milwaukee,
Los Angeles,
Sydney,
Indianapolis,
Tokyo,
Seattle,
Paris,
Budapest,
Berlin,
New York. Ladies and gentlemen, two men who are committed to rocking you wherever you might be, John Astronomy and Mark Striegel. Welcome to the Talking Metal Podcast, broadcasting around the world from TalkingMetal.com and Striegel'sMusicNews.com.
Hey, it's John Astronomy. I am here with Mark. Mark picked this place, by the way.
Yeah, we're here down on Avenue A. We're both getting our guitars set up across the street, actually up the street. And we figured we'd meet up here for a quick podcast. It is a coffee house on Avenue A, sustainable. And the kids are all here. I guess they just got out of school and their parents bring them over here. So you can hear them talking in the background. But anyways, let's get into a little music and then come back and talk about metal, as we always do, and hard rock. This is Viking Skull, Start a War.
Start a War by Viking Skull, a band now featuring Jess Margera, brother of our friend Bam Margera. So we got a great show, Mark. We got Rob Dukes of Exodus on the show. We hung out with him at one of our favorite bars, Circus, the other day.
Yes, we did. He's a great guy and just really I can't tell you. I had a blast interviewing him. It was a lot of fun. We hung out in the back room there at Circus and just talked about all sorts of stuff, from Exodus to Star Wars, and you'll hear that interview shortly. But in the meantime, let's get into a little Exodus. This is a slight little short sound sample of Bonded by Blood, and this is the new version of the song with, of course, Rob Dukes on vocals. Bonded by Blood by Exodus. Bonded by Blood. Pick up the full version of that on iTunes. Yeah, so we're hanging out here down on Avenue A with the kids at the coffee house. So Lon Friend has a great article up on his Facebook page called Of Matt and Metal. It deals with Kevin Dubrow and also the movie The Wrestler. I highly recommend you guys go read that. Some sad news, Overloaded, one of our favorite bands from Michigan, has broken up. How about that?
Man, Eric was one of our friends. We considered him a friend. He was always on the Talking Metal forums, and he was a frequent letter writer. And we just were big fans of Overload, and we're sorry to hear that news. And we hope that some new stuff is going to come out from Eric and the gang.
Yes, it doesn't sound like it, though. He's going to L.A. to try out for a band out there, so we'll see what happens. We read a letter on one of the last podcasts talking about the Ace Frehley tribute that Dimebag Darrell did, and we forgot to mention where that came from. And I don't even know. Is that from Return of the Comet?
I realized that we forgot to answer that, and I'll tell you, it's a little confusing. Dimebag and Vinnie Paul did two tracks for two different albums that both came out right around the same time. One was called Spacewalk, salute to Ace Frehley, and the other one was called Return of the Comet, a tribute to Ace Frehley. And I actually was on Return of the Comet. I did a track with Richie Scarlett and Mitch Weissman. If you guys don't know who Mitch Weissman is, he is the original Paul McCartney in the Broadway play Beatlemania. He's a great friend of Kiss's. He sang on Gene's solo album, and then he went on to write songs on Animalize, and you know, he hung out with those guys. He was actually at one point best friends of both Paul and Gene, and he gets some really good stories. But here's the deal, guys. Spacewalk, you can probably find that online somewhere. It's possible that it's still for sale. The Return of the Comet has long been sold out, but there is a website. If you do some searching on Return of the Comet, you may come up with a website that has a couple of free MP3 downloads. I don't know if the Dimebag track is one of them, but it's definitely worth checking out. And just search either Return of the Comet or Spacewalk, a salute to Ace Frehley.
Guys, big news. Rob Dukes will be joining us at the Screaming Metal Show this Friday. It's probably the next day after you hear this podcast. This Saturday, I'm sorry. This Saturday, Rob Dukes will join Talking Metal's band, Screaming Metal, at Dingbats in New Jersey at 11 p.m. We go on, and Rob Dukes is going to get on stage and play Seek and Destroy with us. You probably heard that in the last podcast. We actually played that at the end of the podcast, us jamming with Exodus and playing Seek and Destroy. So come on down. It's going to be a great show. Screaming Metal featuring Dan Lorenzo, Alan Tecchio, Ron Lipnicki, Metal Mike will be there. It's going to be a blast, and Rob Dukes will be joining us on stage for Seek and Destroy. I can't wait.
It's going to be great. I think Metal Mike is going to join us on that track as well as another track, and it's going to be great. Guys, we have a major announcement to make. By now, you guys might have already realized that this has happened, but if you haven't, you've got to check it out. Talking Metal was once on VH1.com. Talking Metal, as you know, was on Fuse, and now we are proud to announce that there is brand new Talking Metal content on MTV.com. On the Headbangers blog, definitely check it out. Go to headbangersblog.com. Our Metallica Guitar Hero segment is now an MTV segment.
Yes, yes it is. And we will have maybe a news item in our news section about that, I think. So check that out. Links will be up there. Boy, we are still getting letters on Chinese democracy. Dave Anderson from somewhere in Utah wrote in, "It was sweet to see that not only did Bumblefoot play some of your gear on Chinese democracy, but he also thanked Mark and John in the liner notes. I love Talking Metal. It's exciting that you guys have been able to have guys from Guns N' Roses on your show, but how exciting is it for you to be a part of GNR history, like Del James or St. Louis? Awesome stuff." And he goes on to talk about how great Chinese democracy and Guns N' Roses is in his email. Thank you, David. I'm sorry we're not going to read the whole thing. We're kind of pressed for time and maybe slightly burned out on the Chinese democracy emails. I'm not burned out on them. I'm just afraid the listeners are getting burned out on them.
I can talk about Chinese democracy forever as well as Mark can, but we were just slightly concerned that some of the listeners might, be a little tired of it if they're not a GNR fan. But David, we thank you for your letter. Enjoy Utah. You're probably skiing right now. Check one. Hey guys, we're back. It was an incident. Sorry for that. One of the children knocked the recorder off the table. We have moved down the street to a place called Hi-Fi, which used to be a club called Brownies.
Yes, and our recorder seems to be working, although it's making a strange rattling sound now. I don't know what that's all about. Hopefully it's all right.
I hope that this is recording.
Yeah. Anyways, we'll get right to the Rob Dukes interview. I wanted to mention that we got an email from Alan Roberts from Life of Agony. He's a big fan of Talking Metal. He told us in the email, and he sent us a link to a trailer for his new comic book, which is coming out, which you guys should check this out. It looks really, really cool. It's going to be a comic book series called Wire Hangers, and you can check it out online at wirehangerscomic.com. Our friends over at Metal Dogs, myspace.com/metaldogs with a Z, rock, have posted a picture of Ozzy, my dog, on their MySpace page, so you can check that out. And that's about it. We have 5,350 friends now on MySpace.
That is pretty cool, considering the fact that we don't even really ever request anybody, and we're barely even on the site. So imagine what would happen if we actually really put some time into it. And you know what? I'm starting to get into the MySpace, the YouTube. You're the Twitter maniac, and you know, it's cool. It's like Talking Metal is all over the place. I also wanted to mention that Alan is also in a band called Spoiler NYC, which is pretty cool.
Alan Roberts, yeah, from Life of Agony. Cool. And he said if we're doing any jamming, give him a ring. He'd love to come down and play some bass with us.
Very cool. Very cool, Alan. We'll definitely keep in touch. So, guys, we got to explain a couple of cool things about the Rob Dukes interview. We mentioned that Rob mentions that his father was at the interview with us. And it technically wasn't his father, but listen to this, guys. It's really funny. There was this guy. How old do you think that guy was?
Well, he was probably not as old as he looked. He looked about 80. He was probably like, 70.
Yeah, there's this place, the Circus Bar, guys. During the day, you get guys in their 70s hanging out. During the night, you get girls like Gina Romantica, who if you go to the Lady Space page, you'll see her in earlier on. You'll see girls that look like that behind the bar. And we interviewed Serge Tankian in there. Velvet Revolver has been in there. And that's where we decided to interview Rob Dukes. But what was funny is sometimes you get a spillover of that day crowd. And there was a dude passed out, looked 80, probably 70, for half of the interview. And we wanted to get a photo of it. But what happened was during the interview, he got up and, like, stumbled away. Because one man was taunting him earlier on. I don't know. Did you catch that?
Yeah, one of the guys who worked there was like, oh, I'll get rid of that guy for you. Yeah. So, yeah, it was kind of funny. I know we mentioned that we're going to take a picture of him in the interview, but we don't because he escaped. So follow us on Twitter, like John said, and check us out on YouTube.com/talkingmetal. Why don't you subscribe to our YouTube station? Because we are putting content up there almost every week. There's a new video going up.
Yeah, definitely. We're working with a great guy. His name is Jay Bones. This guy is all metal, and he has done some great work for us. Plus, Mark and I are doing some videos on our own. We got some stuff with Rob coming up that will be posted very shortly, if not at the same time you're listening to this. And we're just constantly popping out with new videos. Some of them are winding up on MTV.com. Some of them are winding up on our YouTube page. A lot of exciting things are going on for Talking Metal right now.
Yes, so why don't we get into a little music, followed by the interview, followed by more music. How about some Rob Dukes solo stuff?
Definitely. Want to hear the instrumental first?
Sure.
Okay, this one is called All Dead. It's an instrumental by Rob Dukes, brand new music in full right here on Talking Metal, followed by the interview with Rob Dukes.
Cool. Send us an email, talkingmetal@yahoo.com. Check it out.
John Astronomy, we are back at one of our favorite bars, the Circus Bar, Midtown Manhattan. I'm here with Mark Striegel and our very special guest, Rob Dukes, lead vocalist of Exodus.
How you doing, man?
We're doing good. Last time we did an interview here, we did Serge Tankian from System of a Down, and now we got Rob Dukes from Exodus.
He's awesome. Serge is killer. The album he did with Buckethead, the song he did with Buckethead's my favorite. But that guy, Serge, is cool, man. Dig that guy. And my dad's here. Everyone, you know, we'll get pictures of him later. You know what I mean? So,
not really Rob's dad. We got a guy who we'll just say, let's take a picture of this guy and we'll put it up in today's show notes. He's hanging out with us. It's the three of us and our new friend. But all right, let's start things off with Buckethead then. Why is Buckethead so amazing to you?
He just, hands down, is the greatest guitar player to ever walk the planet. He is truly amazing. I have about 25 albums of his stuff, and it is he is truly just every style, but plays it with such soul, and just the guy is just a truly amazing artist, and is my favorite guitar player in the world. And, you know,
so. Yeah, and I mean, the one thing a lot of these shredders don't have is the soul that that guy has, which I think is just amazing.
Oh yeah, he's like, it's like listening. You ever listen to Blow by Blow, Jeff Beck?
Sure.
You know, and then the following album after that was a completely different style. He like every Jeff Beck always changed his style with every album. And did it well.
Wired before Blow by, is that was the one after?
I think Wired was after. I'm not really sure. It might, I don't really know. I know I have them both, but I know that the styles, he always was really good at changing his styles. And Buckethead doesn't actually change his styles. He just puts them all different on one record and does it over and over again. But he plays. I have like acoustic albums by him that are just, and then I have other ones that are just noise that are just, he just makes, just truly an amazing artist. And I, you know, just in the last couple years, man, has just blown me away with the stuff that he's done. Just blown me away, so.
And have you heard his stuff on the Guns N' Roses Chinese Democracy thing?
Yeah, it's actually the one, the stuff I really did like, you know what I mean? I thought, you know, I don't know why he didn't use them on all the songs, because the ones that Buckethead did, you can tell right away it's him, and they're very. I thought they were pretty cool. So,
you know what I think is great, Rob, about you is that you have such a wide range of music that you like. A lot of fans, I think, will think that if you're an Exodus and you're the singer of Exodus, that when you go home, that's the only type of music that you're into is like Exodus style metal. But you're into jazz. You started out loving punk. Tell us about some of the stuff that you listen to that maybe the Talking Metal fans wouldn't realize that you're going to like.
Lately, it's been I've been listening to a lot of DJ stuff, like DJ like trance stuff, like DJ Shadow. There's this guy DJ Gnome that's really cool. He actually uses Aqua Teen in between all the songs. It's really really funny. So it lightens it up and. And he puts like he'll put like Biggie Smalls over a Dr. Dre beat. Like it's kind of he really and he mixes like one song. He'll use bits of four or five different songs with beats underneath, and have the vocals remain the same. It's really pretty cool. And DJ Shadow, Cut Chemist, those two guys are cool. When I'm in the car, I'm usually listening to Miles Davis. That's like my favorite driving music. And if I'm angry or something, man, it's Rain and Blood. You know what I mean? So, I mean, I do throw in Slayer now and again. I still listen to punk rock. Agent Orange is a pretty good band. I like listen to them a lot. What else do I listen to? Lately, and Buckethead is the mainstay in my musical. It's that's kind of a constant, like, every day. When I'm in the, you know, that's... in my iPod, that's usually the... If you look last played, I think it'd be Miles, Bucket, and, you know, probably some DJ stuff.
Do you know Buckethead?
No, I've been trying to meet him, man. I went to three of his shows this year. I sent him some CDs and stuff, and I've met the bass player, that one guy, and let him know, you know, I was a fan and stuff. I went to one of his shows, and I heard him talk. I heard him yell at the guitar tech guy when his rig blew up at BB King's, and... He stomped off stage. It was pretty great. It was awesome. Oh, shit, he's real. You know what I mean? Yeah, I haven't met him yet. I hope to, you know. I would love to, man. He's pretty awesome. So
we should set in motion a Rob Dukes Buckethead composition together.
That would be awesome, man. Yeah, if you can make that happen, by all means. You know, just want to shake the guy's hand and say he's awesome. That's it, so.
Speaking of collaborations, it was just about 1 year ago today, February 4th, 2008, that we jammed with you on a Metallica classic, and then you went straight to BB King's and put on a killer show, which John and I were both at, and just wanted to take the time right now to thank you for that. It was a really amazing experience for Talking Metal.
It was fun as hell, man. It really was. It was a good time, and I'm glad you guys are, you know, it's cool when... things like that can make other people like happy. So, you know, it was fun to do. It was just fun. It wasn't harboring in any way whatsoever. So, and plus the show was great. I wish I felt better. I was actually kind of sick, but I wish I. And I got to meet Bumblefoot too, who I've stayed in contact with and become friends with, and you know, we talk occasionally and stuff. So I was gonna sing on his record, and my girl got really ill, and I missed the session, so I didn't end up on his record. But we said we're gonna work together in the future, so you know it's pretty cool.
Did I ever send you the photo that was just a close up of you and Bumblefoot after?
No.
Okay, guess what? I will send that to you tomorrow.
Right on. Thanks.
Cool. Well, there is a lot of stuff going on in the world of Exodus right now, and we're going to get to all that. But I first want to just turn back the clock a little bit, and if you could explain to the Talking Metal listeners how you actually first got involved with the band and how it felt, like what feelings did you actually have to know you were going to be joining this legendary metal band?
Well, the first time it was 1985. I bought Bonded by Blood on vinyl, and then I bought it on cassette so I could play it in my car. That I didn't even have wasn't even legal to drive yet. It just sat in my driveway, and I would go out and listen to tapes in the tape deck that I had installed. You know what I mean? And I had the home speakers in the back seat. You remember doing that? And so I had muscle. I had a 1970 Le Mans SS, you know, with a big 400 in it, and all big tires. And that was my, you know, I was a true old school metalhead. I've been listening to it since forever. And then, you know, life went on, and I kind of, you know, everybody does what they do. And then I moved to L.A. in like 2001. So I was out there, and I was working for different bands, guitar teching for different players, and doing different tours. I ended up with a phone call one day. I was actually working with Dave Navarro, and then one night I got a call to go do a tour with Megadeth and Exodus, and I ended up on that tour. And then, you know, I was a fan of, you know, remember the first day being on tour, Dave walked up to me and was, "Hey, I'm Dave." And I'm like, "Dude, I'm Rob, and I've been listening to you forever." You know, and Dave was really cool, and, you know, I was on the bus with the Exodus guys, and me and Tom were huge Tenacious D fans. Wow. Like, we were huge. So we and I knew every word, and Tom knew every word. So we would sing Tenacious D at the top of our voices and smoke cigarettes and sit in the back, and we had a great time. And at the end of the tour, they asked me to get up and sing one of the songs with them. I sang Deranged with them in Portland. And I guess Tom had seen something that was kind of had the ability to sing. So they asked me to, you know, him and Gary called me after that tour and said, "Hey, you want to come out and audition?" And I did. And honestly, man, like, they told me that we went to NAMM that year together, and I, because I lived in L.A., so I met them over at NAMM, and we got to talk. They said, "Yeah, man, you know what, you're going to be the singer," and I was like, "Great," you know, and I spent the next 4 months learning the back catalog and learning stuff and doing Shovelhead, but it really was it was like a dream, you know, always to be in a band and be on tour and see the world, and it never kind of happened. You know, of all the musicians in the world, I am one of those lucky few that get to go do what I've always wanted to do since I can remember. I since I was a kid, I remember loving music more than anything else. It was my savior. You know, whenever things were bad, you always had music to rely on to make you feel better or make you feel worse if that's what you chose to do. You know what I mean? And, you know, I don't do drugs. I don't drink. You know, I music is pretty much all I had in my job, and I took every job importantly, and I've taken this one the same way. And I'm hugely grateful for the experience and the chance, because I was one of those guys that just in the right place at the right time and had a little bit of talent enough to get my foot in the door, and then that spurred on what I've done. And I've really only tried to make Exodus live on because, you know, Steve didn't want to do it anymore and Paul was dead, so... You know, I'm happy to be doing what I do. You know what I mean? I'm grateful. So.
It's amazing. Is it true that you actually drove your motorcycle across country from New York before you joined Exodus?
Yeah, I at one point in my life before that, and I had my, you know, it was kind of funny. I lost my. I was in a band. They fired me because they said I wasn't talented enough, and then. My girl broke up with me like in the same couple months, like within 2 months of that happening. And I was like, wow, you know what? So I gave away every personal possession I had, all my furniture, my bed. I gave up my apartment. I gave it to my friend of mine who was here from England. I let him have everything except my PlayStation 2. And I got on, and I put that in a bag, and I got on my motorcycle, and I left. And I really didn't even know where I was going, except I wanted to go to California to surf and... I was going to finish my scuba diving instructor license, and I was going to teach scuba diving. That was my big plan. And, you know, it never even got there. Like, I got there, I started working in the music business, and I didn't want to be in a band. I was happy being a tour manager and being a guitar tech. It was, you know, it was actually a really cool gig. And then Exodus happened. So, of course, you know, that's the path I took. But, yeah, I rode my motorcycle for about 4 months. I visited family and friends I hadn't seen in years. I drove through the desert and took my time. I stayed in really weird places and stayed in hotels and spent a lot of money and just did what I did, you know what I mean? So it was a great, great experience. It was soul-searching. You know, the whole trip was, I was alone. I didn't talk to anybody. I was definitely searching for something, and I found it, you know, before I even got to Exodus, I found out exactly what I was looking for, which was I just needed to go do that. I needed to go have a goal and then obtain it. You know what I mean? And that was the goal, was to somehow along that way find myself. And I, you know, and Exodus was a huge bonus. Like, as a guitar tech and a tour manager, and I was making, you know, I was had a good living, man. I lived in Hollywood. I was, you know, I was banging lots of, you know, hot girls, and I was having a great time, man. You know what I mean? I really was. I was hanging out with really cool people, and I had some friends from New York that were living out there, and we had fun. And Exodus was a bonus on top of all of that. You know, being, you know, okay with my life, and then having that happen. So I think if the opportunity had come a few years earlier, I don't think I would have been in the mindset to do what I do. I think I was a little bit of a mess, you know what I mean, in my head. But it all worked out. So, you know, here we are.
What's amazing is that from some things that people would all say were a negative, you know, you had a falling out with your band and with your girl, what came of that was that you found yourself going across country, doing the soul searching, and then what I think is really great is you said you were, you know, fine with that. That was great, and then the Exodus thing was a bonus on top of that.
Yeah, absolutely, man. And, you know, I mean, I've always had a tumultuous relationship with my family. Like, it's always been a love-hate thing, and I've been the black sheep and always, you know, lived on the outside. And what happened along that trip was I had made amends to them. I had said I was sorry for my part and how things had ended up, you know, and then in return, and I didn't expect anything of that. I just wanted to say my piece and leave it at that. And my family really embraced it and said the same thing back to me. And, you know, and I since then, I've been a better son. I've been a better brother, been a better uncle. You know, I mean, I've been a part of my family that I was always a little bit hesitant to. I lived in New York on my own for my whole life. You know, they all lived somewhere else. And along with the soul searching, it was great to put those demons to rest. And all of a sudden, I found myself surfing and living on the beach and in Venice, California, with no demons. It was awesome. You know, no demons other than the ones that I create for myself going through life. You know what I mean? So, but it was awesome to have that relief. And this way I could stand on stage and look out and be myself. And it was nerve-wracking to try to find myself up there. You know what I mean? I didn't want to pretend and be anyone else. I didn't want to, like, they were like, you know, that one of the reasons me and Paul Bostaph didn't get along was, you know, he had certain ideas of what I should say and what I should do. And I pretty much, you know, can I curse?
Yeah.
Oh, I was like, you know, fuck you, dude. I'm not going to. He was like, you know, maybe watch Corey from Slipknot or watch Phil and from, you know, from Pantera and watch what they do and watch, you know, Tom Araya. And I'm like, but I'm not any of those dudes. I'm me. And it was one of the things that hindered our relationship, I think. It definitely caused a little riff. And there were a couple other things that you know, one of the, you know, I like Paul. I mean, I'm friends with Paul. I don't have any. I mean, he knows if he were to hear this, he would be like, oh, yeah, it's pretty true. Yeah. I did have certain ideas. And I didn't watch video of anyone else. I didn't watch, you know, other bands and see what they did. I pretty much just did what I did to be myself. And in this way, I can look myself in the mirror and go, yeah, I'm not lying. You know, I am. This is what it is. And if you don't like it, you know, buy something else. I lay my head down at sleep with a clear conscience on how I've gotten to this point. You know what I mean? So that's been a bonus on top of everything else that happened leading up to this experience. So
now, you mentioned Bonded by Blood earlier, listening to it in your car. Let's talk about the decision to re-record it, Let There Be Blood, and Was this a decision that came from others within the band, or was it kind of a mutual decision? The band just wanted to kind of update the sound of this record, this classic record?
Well, you know, it had started with a... they wanted to record a live performance of it, right? And, you know, of all the things that happen, when you record a live record, one of the things that happens is everything gets redone. you know, the classic album, Another Lesson in Violence, was Paul's last record, which was basically, you know, Bonded by Blood with a few extra songs live. And the truth is that everything was re-recorded, you know, so including the vocals. Some of the crowd stuff in between is obviously left in, but nothing ever, it all, you know, the only thing you can't, that was remains live is the drums, you know what I mean? And even they can be edited now in today's world, you know what I mean? So we were like, you know what, we have some studio time, we have some free time. Instead of making a live record and not really being live, let's just go, you know, re-record it. You know, we had the studio time, and that's how it came about. And basically, you know, it was the idea that, wait, we play them a little faster, we play them a little different.
Tuning is different too, right?
The tuning is the tuning they use now. I mean, and everyone was like, "Oh, it's a big money scam," and blah. And like, we don't make any money from this stuff, man. We don't make money selling records. We make money touring. You know, I mean, it was like, for all the reasons that people hated us for doing this, we're like, really? That's all you're gonna argue? That's all the argument you got? It was really futile for, you know. But you know what it was, man? Listen, this is, the fans want to hear how we do them now. This is how we do them now. It wasn't any disrespect meant to anybody or Paul or the old school fans. If you don't like it, man, you can go buy the original. You know, it's still there. So
yeah, and I mean, I think the thing that I notice about it is that I could actually see a younger, let's say like a 15, 16-year-old kid today, maybe not feeling what we felt by the original just because of the production value of it, whereas the new version of it definitely takes it into a more modern time, for me at least, and it's fierce, and it just punches you in the face, and I highly recommend all you guys check it out.
Well, you know what's funny is, the you know, there are people that still listen to vinyl, and you know, like, you know, I like that old school sound, and are you insane? Are you fucking kidding me? You'd rather watch something on VHS than fucking Blu-ray? Are you out of your fucking mind? You know, the drums on there are like in a tin can, and there's so much echo on Paul's voice. I mean, dude, granted, Paul was great. You know, I'm not taking nothing away from the guy. But, you know, without the echo on there, it was really, really flat and dry. And, you know, I love the record, but, you know, that was the hindrance of that record was the sound. But the vibe is awesome. Like, you know, some of that could not be recreated. And, you know, like I said, the old one's still there for the people that don't want to listen to it. This was basically redone for people that want to – we wanted people to know this is how we play now. We play them faster. We play them slower on some parts. We play them heavier, and our sound is really quite different than it was. And you know what, man, bands that recorded in 85, I wouldn't be surprised if most of them would be like, yeah, I'd really like to go do that. Because I play better. Gary plays better now. It's 20 years later. Paul, you know, Tom plays better now. You know, so it's kind of like just one of them things that you can't win them all, and you're not going to please everybody. So whatever.
And Atrocity Exhibition Exhibit B is happening. Correct.
Correct. We started it. You know, we have some tours coming up. We're going to keep riding on those tours. Like I was telling you guys before, I got a mobile Pro Tool studio, so I'm going to bring it on the bus, and we're going to be able to you know, pre-produce stuff and come up with ideas. And, you know, I think some of the things that we originally written a long time ago might not hold water now because it's a different life. You know, it's taken on a life of its own now. It's a little meaner. It's a little darker. You know, it's definitely... I mean, the idea is to, you know, surpass yourself with every record. You know, I mean, that's basically what we're trying to do. And I think some of the things on the last record needed to be tweaked on the stuff that you guys haven't heard yet because we haven't, you know, recorded it yet. The stuff we did record, we're like, you know, that riff's great. This one, not so great. You know what I mean? We could do better than that. So I think that's why they didn't end up on the record. But, you know, for the most part, we all have the idea that it's going to be faster, darker, slower, meaner, you know, all the adjectives you can think of to throw in there. But it's just going to be a better record. I'm not trying to hype it up or nothing, but, you know, so.
What I think is cool is that you are recording it on both coasts. And tell us a little bit about how that works.
Only the Let There Be Blood, the other one. The next one, like I said, I'll be on the bus with them, and then I'll probably go out to San Francisco for a few months and, you know, and stay while we do that. You know, I live here, you know, so it's hard to bounce back and forth a lot. I mean, I do it on a regular basis, but I don't really enjoy it. Neither is my girl, like, you know, so. But we did the vocals. They did all the music there in like a week or two. And then basically I have a server here, and they bounce the songs onto a server. I pulled them off and then put them into my my Pro Tools rig, and then I brought them to my buddy's studio, and I just did the vocals. And then when I was done with it, I would send it back to – I would put an MP3 form, email it to Gary, and Gary would say, this is great. This needs to be tweaked. You know, and he would go through it line by line, and that's how we did the whole record. And I did all the vocals in about 10 days, about a day a song, you know, a song a day, I mean. You know, so it worked out, you know, I thought.
Cool. And amongst all this Exodus stuff that you got going on, recording, touring, you're also staying busy with, can I call it solo stuff, or is it? You know?
Yeah, I'm making a solo record by myself. And then I have a couple different things going on. I got one project. Don't know what we're calling it yet. We can't agree on a title. You know, it's me, Rob Machete from Propane and MOD. It's the two bands he's been in. Sam from Mortician is a drummer, and then my friend Jay Trenzer, and my other friend Lou, and we're gonna. It's like a thrash record. It's a little hardcore. It's a little punk. It's a little bit of everything, man. Honestly, it's a really cool record. We just finished drums and guitars. They're doing bass tonight, actually, and then I'm gonna start and go maybe tonight later and go do some vocals you know, I've got all the lyrics written. I wrote all the lyrics. They wrote all the music. Me and Jay wrote one of the songs. He wrote a riff. I wrote the other riff. It's kind of doomy and dark and like real Sabbath-y kind of thing. And then I have this other record I'm doing. It's just me by myself. It's music that I wrote by myself for myself. And then my friend was like, it's really good, let's record it. And then I'm doing it's basically just rock, just, you know, just rock stuff. And then I have I'm making another record of just kind of like I'm actually got inspired by Buckethead, and I made it's just a transient record, no vocals, all music, goes from anywhere from hip hop to trance to jazz to I got a Roland 505 and I just using weird sounds and shifting them and making them weird and putting them drum beats underneath them and, you know, using movie clips and cartoon clips and stuff and just making like a weird hour-long record to paint by. I don't know. Watch grass. I don't know. It's not anything. It's just I like it and I'm going to put it out. I'm not even going to sell it. I'm just going to download. You can download it for free on my website pretty soon. So I'm not even going to really mix. I'm going to mix it as best I can. So which isn't very much. You know, I'm not very good at that yet. So. But I'm trying. I've been taking Pro Tools lessons and going to classes and learning how to do stuff and record stuff. So I've been staying busy, man, like on this trip. And I'm making a DVD, an Exodus DVD. We 4 years of touring. I've got all the video and I'm editing it all together. And we got a Vakken DVD coming out. We played Vakken in front of 80,000 people, and they got it on high dev 12-camera shoot. And so it's awesome footage, 80,000 people, $10,000 person wall of death. It was insane, dude. It was really cool, man. That was the show of my life. It was the reason that we do this. It was 80,000 people screaming and watching us. It was awesome, dude. It was so surreal. I don't remember doing it. Like, I was, you know what I mean? It was like, before I walked on stage, I looked out, I saw the crowd, I threw up, and then I walked out and played for an hour and got back on the bus and said, what just happened? You know what I mean? It was fucking insane, man. It was the reason I lived my whole life to do that. I mean, I said after the show, if I died right now, it'd all be good. I've been a cartoon character, and I just played in front of 80,000 people. What else is left? you know? So,
were you a cartoon character on Metalocalypse?
Yes, I was. I was on in episode 12, season 2. I was the newscaster or the spokesman for the coffee company, and I was one of the voices in the hospital along with Gary and Lee and Jack and Tom. We were all on that episode along with Mark Hamill and Malcolm McDowell. So like I'm like one step away from you know, meeting Luke Skywalker, you know what I mean, and Alex from Clockwork Orange, you know what I mean. It was that cool. I actually have the screenshot of the all our names together. And I blew it up and put it on my wall. It's like, you know, I framed it, and it's pretty rad, dude. Lightly, it was cool as fuck, yeah.
And the guys in Metallica do some voices on that show, right?
They actually did, they did one or two episodes, like, early on, like, you know, before that. Yeah, so, yeah, for season one, yeah. And Brendan, I was a huge fan of Brendan's show before that, which is a show called Home Movies. I've been a fan for years, and he showed up at a gig in L.A., and, you know, we started talking, and after 10 minutes, his girlfriend was like, "You guys should go out because we have all the same interests. Like we talk for hours. You know what I mean? We're both fucking huge Queen fans and Buckethead, and just had all these geeky cartoon references. You know, because I'm a huge comic book collector, and just we knew we had all, you know, and we've become friends since. So it's been really cool that he allowed us to come on a show, and it was really great. It was a great, cool experience. It's in the DVD, like showing us, seeing us do the voices. So it was pretty. Really cool. Cool thing I did in my life, you know? So,
awesome stuff. Now, I've been reading the Star Wars Legacy comics. I'm really getting into them. They're a great read, and it has inspired me to start reading the Star Wars novels. And I understand that you've read some of them, and I wanted to ask you which ones you could recommend.
Tales from Jabba's Palace is awesome. Tales from the Bounty Hunter is all about Boba Fett. Is absolutely brilliant. Tales from the Bounty Hunter are about all the bounty hunters that you see in Empire Strikes Back.
Bosk.
Yeah, Bosk, all of them. You know, IG-88, they all have a story. And then there's one Hard Merchandise, which it's three novels. It's about Boba Fett. It's awesome. They all go in order. Boba Fett loses after in episode 6 when he falls into the Pit of Carcoon, he gets out. And then he goes and gets new armor. And these three books take him from once he goes into the pit, like once he falls into the hole, you know, how he, for the next three novels, is a story. It's brilliant. Tales from Jabba's Palace is great. Tales from the Cantina. Every character in the bar has a story, and this book covers the whole bar. Those are all brilliant, brilliant books. Actually, the Clone War books by Karen Travis are actually really good too. I started reading them.
They're kind of newer,
and Karen Travis is really good. There's two books. I forget who the author is, but they take place 1,000 years before Episode One. They're about the original Jedi and the Dark Side guys. So it's original. It's 1,000 years before. It's called Path to Destruction, and it's all about this guy called Darth Bane, who was the baddest motherfucker ever walking.
Was he a Sith? Or?
He was a Sith Lord, and he was the baddest motherfucker ever, dude. He kills everybody. He's awesome, and he's in the first two novels, and I'm waiting for the third one to come out.
I bought a book from the book club when I was in grade school called Splinter of the Mind's Eye. Are you guys familiar with that at all?
I never read that, but I know what you're talking. I read at that age. I read Han Solo at Star's End. I don't know if you remember those.
Yeah, I'm not familiar with it. I was actually kind of into graphic novels, and Iron Man was my favorite always. It's kind of funny that, you know, I say that now that the movies come out, but I truly was as a kid, Iron Man was my favorite. And the fact is, he was a drunk, was awesome, and he was like, you know what I mean. He was recovering out drunk like myself, you know. And then he started drinking and became a bad guy for a while, and then, you know, got his shit together. And so, you know, I'm wondering if they're going to play on that in the next movies to come. I kind of hope they do. It's kind of a cool idea. So, you know.
So how long have you been sober for?
March will be 16 years.
Oh, wow. Congratulations. That's great.
Yeah, it's just the way it is for me, man. You know what I mean? So, you know.
I feel bad when he asked you to come to a bar.
No, I go to bars all the time, dude. I live on a tour bus with a bunch of drunks. You know what I mean? It's my personal choice. I don't ask anybody around me to live their life any different than they do. I don't judge anybody for what they do. You do coke, do whatever. I don't care. As long as you don't affect my life, I'm all good. And, you know, and I don't impose my will on anybody. You know, this was a personal choice for myself. I just reacted differently when I took drugs and drank, man. I was a fucking asshole. So, you know, try not to be now, you know?
Well, good for you. I wish some of that would rub off on me.
Rob, last time we hung out, you mentioned that you're a big Queens of the Stone Age fan. I wanted to ask you what your favorite songs and or records by Queens are.
Kaya Sky Valley. But I love Queens. The first record's awesome. Rated R is great. Actually, they've not put out a bad record yet. Even the last one was Irrevogalis or whatever. Great record. You know, the first album is by far my favorite. Regular John's one of my favorite songs. Queens of Stone Age. But Kaya Sky Valley is really where Josh really, you know, that whole... I mean, anything by Kaius I like, but Josh has really always been one of my favorite musician, guitar player, you know, later became a singer, and just, I love the style that he, you know, I love to get invited to the Desert Sessions. That would be fucking, that would be a dream come true, you know what I mean? Not that I ever will, because I'm, but, you know, it's just one of those things, like, I have all the Desert Session stuff, I have all of John Garcia's solo stuff, Unita, and, which I like that album a lot, too, man, it's really great, and, you know, anything he touches, man, I enjoy. Queens is one of my favorite bands, you know. So,
you prefer them with Nick Oliveri or like both lineups?
It doesn't matter, honestly. I mean, the tonality of that comes. You can tell that Josh is the genius behind that. If you think that music's great, you understand that Josh is a driving force behind that. You know what I mean? How it all comes across, you know what I mean? I saw it as Kaius later on. I think the reason they stepped away from John was they weren't looking for more commercial success. I think they were just looking for a better structure, because Kaius was definitely all over the place. But Sky Valley is one of the best albums ever written. I mean, it's from beginning to end, there's just flashes of complete brilliance that span the spectrum of music. I mean, they fall into every... It's like I used to think that it was like the Dead trippy meeting Sabbath, you know, like trippy, and it was just heavy but groovy and crunchy and I'm not a hippie and I don't really like the Grateful Dead, but I imagine that if I took a lot of drugs that I wish my music would come out like that, you know. I'm a huge fan of that. I listen to Kaya Sky Valley probably once a month, like that passes through my I need to listen to that record, you know, and so that and Queens of Stone Age is one of those other records that I play on a regular basis, you know, along with like Rain and Blood. You know, it's one of those staples of my life that just I love that album. Queen, News of the World, once a month, you know, boom, gotta throw that one in, you know. So Beastie Boys, you know, throw that in once a month, you know, the stuff that I grew up my whole life on. But yeah, Josh Homme is absolutely brilliant. Yeah, absolutely brilliant songwriter, you know, kind of, you know.
Well, Rob, thank you very much for taking the time to come down to the Circus Bar and hang out with Talking Metal. And we look forward to hanging out with you in the future and on tour with Exodus.
Right on, dude. Thank you, man. Awesome.
Right now, we're going to hear some more Rob Dukes. This is My Whole Life by Rob Dukes on Talking Metal. See you later.
Check Rob out on his MySpace, which we link. We'll be right back.
wasted all my life.